It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pittsburgh is home to 7,500 nonprofit organizations, and about 300,000 people work in the sector. Many of these organizations also rely on volunteers in order to fulfill their missions. In recent years, for-profit businesses have increased their reliance on volunteer labor as well. Peggy Uten is executive director of Robert Morris University's Bayer Center for Nonprofit Management, and she joins us to make sense of the volunteer economy and talk about the future of volunteering. Peggy Uten, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much, Paul. Delighted to be here.
So what is the story of nonprofit growth, and how has volunteerism evolved through the generations?
Oh, that's a great question. Nonprofits have exploded. If you look at charts that go back to the 1970s, and you look at the number of people entering the workforce in the baby boomer generation, women entering the workforce who are very important to the nonprofit story, and the number of nonprofits, it's a hockey stick that goes straight up. So, for instance, in the 1950s, when they first began to sort of do the laws around nonprofit work, I mean, charities have been with us for, you know, generations, but nonprofits as a formal entity were really kind of began to be studied and quantified in the 50s. There were about 50,000. They're now 1.5 million.
Wow.
And it has been a steady growth. I think the idealism of the baby boomers generation, the Vietnam War, we need to make this country ours and do the work there, has really led to enormous growth and development in nonprofits.
So things like the Peace Corps that sort of encouraged or even lent an element of glamour to the idea of volunteerism.
Yeah, service to country beyond military service, which we certainly respect and admire, but, you know, the other ways that people can serve. And then in the 1980s, in the Reagan administration, there began a process of devolution. And that was that there began a dialogue about what is the role of government in people's lives and what is the role of the nonprofit sector. And the result of that devolutionary cycle was that a whole lot more money went into nonprofit organizations via government contracts. The human service industry has grown dramatically over these years, and the stakes for nonprofits and the way they manage themselves have gone up exponentially as the emphasis on what their contribution can be to society has also grown.
In the intro, I pointed out some figures that illustrate the size of Pittsburgh's nonprofit and not-for-profit industries. But what do those numbers mean for this town?
Those numbers mean for this town that we are very dense on the ground with nonprofit organizations here. We have a very strong and capable nonprofit community, if you will. We are blessed, as everyone in Pittsburgh knows, with enormous wealth in the foundation community and the foundation leaders and their ability to fund innovative ideas, to give seed money and opportunity for an idea to grow in the nonprofit space has made Pittsburgh one of the leading in the country in terms of nonprofit leadership, innovation, and management. So this is a very interesting place to be in the nonprofit community. I've lived and worked in Texas and in Louisiana, and I was recruited to Pittsburgh because I wanted to know this nonprofit community because they had it going on.
Well, what are some of the important roles that these organizations play?
So let's think about who doesn't have a nonprofit touch their life. Every single person that's listening to us right this minute is listening to a nonprofit entity. And we are blessed and fortunate to have WESA. I wouldn't want to live my life without it.
Oh, well, thank you.
But, you know, when you're a child, you may swim at the Y. You may be a scout. You may be in youth places after school. Many, many families, I would venture to say almost every family, has some nonprofit in their life in some way. And then you think about the sandwich generation, the people who have both children and elderly parents. Many of the elderly parents benefit from the nonprofit services from Jewish Family and Children's Services, from Presbyterian Senior Care, and the list goes on and on and on. I was at the Wait, Don't Tell Me taping last night.
Oh.
And, you know, just had a big fun time there.
Sounds like everybody did.
It was great. But, you know, that again is a nonprofit expression of what makes our lives more fun, more interesting. The Conflict Kitchen that you were just talking about, the Slow Food Pittsburgh. I mean, the nonprofit sector, I think you can boil down to increased quality of life for Pittsburghers across many, many dimensions, not to mention the whole educational field, which from Robert Morris University, I definitely want to say, you know, a shout out to the educational field. But nonprofits are pervasive. They are in service. They are on the ground. And they are knitting us together as a society to be a decent and humane place to live.
Other than membership discounts, tax credits, and altruism, what are the incentives that you're seeing for people to volunteer with organizations in the current 21st century climate?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that it is true that often people are seeking volunteer work that allows them to expand their skills. So they, we have a wonderful set of younger professionals in our community. And when they serve on a nonprofit board, they learn a lot about how to bring a group, pretty disparate, sometimes people say herding cats kind of group, to bring a group into a good, productive decision-making process and make something happen for the community. And they may be able to learn that at their nonprofit board in a way that they're not yet able to play at their company. You know, I think we'll talk a little bit later, a little bit more about how businesses see volunteering as a professional development tool. But individuals also will seek opportunities to learn something or to meet people or to understand their community much better. Leadership Pittsburgh is a wonderful nonprofit here, and they do a great job at educating future leaders on what are the issues we should be able to understand better. So nonprofit work expands people's worlds. It gives them opportunities to meet people, to do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do. But if you don't, at base and at bottom, may have it make your heart beat faster. If it doesn't make you feel good, if it doesn't make you live your values, then you're probably not going to keep doing it. Most volunteers are first there for the cause and then there for what they can get out of it.
We're talking with Peggy Uten. She's executive director of the Robert Morris University Bayer Center for Nonprofit Management, talking about volunteering and the volunteer economy. Peggy, the East End Food Co-op recently ended part of their volunteer program because of legal concerns. What are some of the acceptable and unacceptable ways for volunteers to contribute to an organization?
Yeah, that's a puzzling situation. In my early career in Austin, Texas, I ran a museum store. And the IRS has kept a close watch on this UBIT problem. That's unrelated business income tax kind of thing.
UBIT,
yeah. So they've been looking at nonprofits not unfairly competing with for-profit businesses. And in those days, I was told that one of the ways that the IRS saw us as a nonprofit business was that we depended heavily on volunteer labor. That was one of their metrics to say, this is in the community good because people are willing to do this for free. So in my museum store, I had a buyer who was a volunteer. I had two women who were junior league placements who had an antique store and taught me how to do inventory and taught me how to manage the cash and, you know, many, many practical business illustrations. So when the East End Food Co-op said that volunteers might be forcing people out of jobs that should be paid, that was of interest to me and didn't accord with my experience in the commercial field. 10,000 Villages here is an excellent nonprofit and runs their store almost 100% on volunteer labor. I'm not an attorney, Paul. I'm not qualified to give legal advice, and I bow to my friends in the legal community that are labor lawyers. But I do think that it's a puzzling, confusing message to say that somehow nonprofit people are wrong to use volunteer labor. And in the news coverage that I read about the East End story, the people said, we didn't come for the discount or the incentives. We came because we loved this organization and we wanted it to thrive. And so I'm not sure what happened in that situation.
Is there, you know, just going forward and looking at, you know, dealing with this issue of balancing the value of having a nonprofit institution powered by volunteers with the need to fairly compensate people for their work? Is there a, do you see a middle ground here?
Yeah, I think that the emphasis of nonprofits needs to always be central to what advances our charitable mission. And if it is taking advantage of people, and I've read some things about interns who really were just taken advantage of. They were put to work doing things that nobody else wanted to do, and they got it to be done for free, and there wasn't an emphasis on what were they learning from their internship or how was this adding to their education. But if a nonprofit is primarily focused on its mission and delivering its mission, and it includes its volunteer strategy in how do we make sure that our ultimate goal is to deliver the best service for the least amount of money so that we maximize every donor's dollar, then I think that you're going to be very thoughtful about your use of volunteers, and you're going to make sure that you are using them properly and fairly to your staff and to your volunteers.
How are you seeing technology come into play with nonprofits?
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for asking that question. The Bear Center for Nonprofit
Management.
Particular
area of expertise for you.
Yes. We are 15 years old this year in our work and service. We've worked with over 3,000 nonprofits. And I came to Pittsburgh to found the Bear Center in 1999, and I brought with me a desire to see that we could be one of the agents to see that technology was better used in nonprofits. So we've been talking about volunteers, which are one method of efficiency and effectiveness in delivering the products, whatever those products are. Technology is germane to that. Technology can leverage the efforts of a paid staff person enormously. Jeff Forster, who has worked at our Bear Center in the technology department for 13 years, tells a story about an agency that was doing their county reports. They had to report their measurements of all of their programs. And they were gathering pieces of paper up from all over the office and from a variety of different people. And when he showed them how to use a database, they were able to take something that had taken a staff person 4 days a month down to 4 hours a month.
Wow.
So we are really interested in seeing that nonprofits who often are under-resourced across the board are able to use technology in the most interesting and possible way. And, of course, who hasn't paid attention to the Ice Bucket Challenge and what technology has done in possibly opening doors for new donors and new kinds of people to see themselves as philanthropists. So we are very interested in the holistic use of technology in nonprofits. And to that end, we have a conference on October the 30th called Tech Now. We've been doing this for a number of years, and we welcome not just people who are technology savvy, although we love to talk to them too,
sure,
but we also like the technology novice who's just curious about how could I do a better job? What efficiencies could I bring into my organization? How could we have a bigger impact, a bigger footprint if I was better at social media? We've got an outstanding keynote speaker coming, and we really hope to see people at that conference.
And so finally, what then is the future of volunteerism? How do you see it, especially with adding technology to the equation and all of these other issues we've talked about?
So I want to talk to you about business and volunteerism, because we have a really interesting thing happening with a couple of our large corporations. Both Bayer and Alcoa have recognized that as the millennials enter the workforce, they're about service. In fact, they say that millennials, as they are getting their job offer, are asking, in addition to salary, what service opportunities am I going to have? And so there's a big movement, and we are part of it here, in employee engagement through service in nonprofit organizations. When Greg Babe was the CEO at Bayer, he said to me, I want my people out in the community, and Bayer's been an outstanding participant in the community. I want them out there doing good community work. But he said, I want them to learn a bunch of stuff that they're going to bring right back to Bayer and put to work in our meetings and in our decision-making processes and in that way. So we are finding that corporate and business people who practice good volunteer work, and that often means work release time, Paul. It means not just saying it's a nice thing if you can do it on the weekends and on vacation days, but we'll give you some time to do volunteer work. If they practice that kind of thing, they build their culture to be one that is more receptive to these millennial people who are coming in. We're hearing, you know, greatest generation redux. They're coming in to say, this is a corporation I like and respect and want to work for, not only because of what they do in their business life, but also because what they do in the community is real and practical and on the ground. So I think that volunteerism is robust. The baby boomers are turning 65 at the rate of 10,000 a day. What a wealth of talent is come in our direction. And younger people are saying, I want to volunteer. I am very, very optimistic about the future of volunteering.
We've been talking with Peggy Uten. She's executive director of Robert Morris University's Bayer Center for Nonprofit Management. Peggy, thank you so much for visiting with us. We appreciate it.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Coming up, a conversation with Grammy-winning recording artist Sheena Easton, who is appearing with the Pittsburgh Symphony Pops this weekend. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.
You count on WESA and NPR to be your window to the world. We count on your contributions to keep that window open. It's our fall membership drive. I'm Irina Zhorov, and with me in the studio here is Mark Newtbar. Hi, Mark.
Hey, thank you very much. Thank you for listening to 90.5 WESA. Thank you for you know, just understanding this world of southwestern Pennsylvania a little bit more because of the excellent interviews that Paul Guggenheimer brings us each and every day. Show your thanks for that type of radio with a membership contribution at 412-697-2955 or online at wesa.fm. Still to go this hour, four more calls or clicks of support. That number again is 412-697-2955.
It's been a bit of a slow start this hour, but we still have 20 minutes to go to meet that goal. Just four people. That's one person, or two people rather, you know, in the next 10 minutes, then two more. Come on, that's not that hard. If you're listening now, maybe you listen all the time. You listen in the mornings and the afternoons. You love our programming. Give us a call and support WESA, 412-697-2955. Maybe you're taking a break right now. You can also log on and do it at our website, wesa.fm.
Yeah, whatever it is that you're doing at this time of day, aren't you happy that 90.5 WESA's Essential Pittsburgh is there to accompany you? It's a great program. It truly is. And I can say that because, yeah, I do work at this radio station, but I don't have a lot of direct involvement with what happens on this program. This crew does an amazing job. They work hard on your behalf each and every day. And you need to show some respect for that with a membership contribution. The number is 412-697-2955 or online. It's WESA.fm.
The thing I love about Essential Pittsburgh is that as a transplant to Pittsburgh, I'm originally from South Florida, it really gives me interesting insights I would have never found anywhere else. There isn't a magazine you can pick up that would give you the information about Pittsburgh and the primary issues Pittsburgh face other than Essential Pittsburgh. I listen to it at 8 p.m. because we can't catch the 12 o'clock show, and my husband and I use it as a discussion point during dinner. Hi, my name is Nivia Henry, and I live in Squirrel Hill. I became a member of 90.5 simply because I find myself listening to the programming throughout the day, from the start of my morning with Morning Edition all the way to the end with Marketplace, and then in the evening winding down with Fresh Air and BBC News. You have to understand that you have to contribute to that, otherwise we won't get the lineup that we have. Please call 412-697-2955 or go to WESA.fm. Thank you.
If you're like those folks and also a big fan of Essential Pittsburgh, do your part. Give us a call. Pledge your support. It's 412-697-2955 or WESA.fm. You know, there's a lot to support in this program. They've got producers. They've got Paul Guggenheimer. You know, there's a lot that goes into bringing you this show, and we hope you appreciate it, and we hope you'll support it as well. And Shelley from Bethel Park called in. She started a sustaining membership. She showed her support. We hope you'll do the same.
Absolutely. And it only takes a few moments at 412-697-2955. Just 2 minutes on the phone. Just a few minutes if you become a member online at WESA.FM. We're trying to, you know, deal with these high concept issues. You know, we want you to pay for thoughts and we want you to pay for airtime and things like that. And, it's really kind of hard to get your hands on. But here's something that can definitely put your hands on. I would love to send out to you an Essential Pittsburgh mug. It's an 11-ounce, you know, it's kind of standard-size mug, white. It's got the Essential Pittsburgh logo on it. It's yours for a one-time gift of $90, or you can spread that out over an entire year, $7.50 a month. The number, again, is 412-697-2955. Online, it's WESA.FM. That's just our way of saying thanks and our way of putting something tangible in your hand to represent what is wonderful about this radio station.
Tangible, but also intangible. Think the cred you'll get from having a mug like that. You will be the envy of your office, I promise. So give us a call. Pledge your support. 412-697-2955. For far less money than you spend on weekly indulgences, like coffee, for example, you can ensure that one of the essentials in your life, WESA, is here every day, every time you turn on the radio. Think about, what if you called in and pledged how much you spend on coffee a month? That would be great. So give us a call, 412-697-2955, or you can also do it on our website, WESA.FM.
Make that call of support. Don't wait around any longer. You know that you have been meaning to get around to it. You know that you have been meaning to be part of this radio station. You know that now is your time. And you know that you can do that $5 a month or that $10 a month. The number is 412-697-2955. The website, you go to it all the time and look at some of the news and information that's on there. Now we just ask that you click on the Donate Now button. It's WESA.FM.
And it's really easy. It takes just a couple minutes. If you call in, one of the friendly volunteers will just ask you a couple of questions just to get some basic information from you. A couple minutes and you'll be on your way. So give us a call, 412-697-2955.
Four more calls or clicks left to go. Yours can be next, should be next, and it will be next. I know it. I have faith in you at 412-697-2955.